Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride and today joined by Dave Prentice, Sam Carroll and Gav Buckland as we chew the fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park. And there were plenty inside the space of 120 minutes on Goodison on Wednesday, enough to fill a podcast on its own, but we will, of course, talk about other things as well as that Spurs FA Cup tie, but that will be the starting point. We'll go on to look ahead to this weekend's game with Fulham, of course, and all the news from Carlo Ancelotti's press conference and, of course, the cup draw itself for the quarterfinals. But we'll start with Wednesday night. Preno, when was the last time you watched an Everton game as chaotic, as astonishing, as remarkable as that one?
Wow, it's probably the greatest game I've never seen. Or wasn't physically at. It was a strange one, really, because we were so poor for like 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and then suddenly found ourselves 3-1 up. And like, where did that come from? You're absolutely, you know, bouncing. And then a ridiculous goal on a stroke of half time to concede, which made you so angry. And then the second half, I felt exhausted at the end of it because it was so tense and it was such a strange one. Normally, you watch a game like that and you end it with a sense of exhilaration. Like, for example, the 3-3 draw, the derby match, a 3-3 draw, which is probably the greatest derby I've seen. That was like incredible. I felt more after that game on Wednesday night than maybe I did after the famous 4-4 draw, which was full of mistakes and you're a bit tense and you don't know quite how it's going to go. So it was a really, really strange sensation at the end of it. Once the game's finished and you know you can't possibly give another goal away from a corner, you're absolutely, you know, sort of buzzing then, and that sense of relief and exhilaration can, you know, sort of wash over you. But to answer the question, wow, well, we haven't won a game 5-4 since the championship season in 1984, I do believe. Gavin will correct me if I'm wrong there. And I didn't see that one because that was away at Watford. I didn't actually go to that game. So it's remarkable to have a cup tie, you know, with 9 goals like that. It's one of the best I've seen without actually physically having been there for a long, 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 long time. You know, memorable for all the right reasons, all the wrong reasons. It's just a unique game. I suppose the bottom line is I'm just absolutely thrilled that we won because it overcomes that Everton that mentality that everyone thinks, oh, here we go. You know, so we're 3-1 or, you know, we get it back to 3-3. This is Everton that. That's all being blown away now by Carlo. Carlo is once again, and we've said it before in these podcasts, he's imbuing Everton with this sense of ambition and the sense of confidence that Everton Football Club used to have, you know, back when we were a successful football team. And so, all right, so you've conceded 2 goals, you got it back to 3-3. Doesn't mean it's all going to go wrong. Go again, dig again, show character. And they did. So lots and lots of strange, you know, sort of sensations going through my head after that. Bottom line is, though, a sense of relief and a sense of fulfillment, really, that, you know, we didn't, you know, give up when the going got tough, and Carlo produced a side that had the guts and the character to see it through in the end. So, long answer, I'm sorry, because it was a very, very long night, but yeah, really, really enjoyed it.
Yes, it was a long night. Gav, is Preno's is history correct there? Is the last 5-4 game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was only our fourth one ever. And I'm a big fan of Preno. Mentioned the mid-80s twice in his opening gambas on the podcast, by the way. The Watford game was 84-85. I mean, if you want my comments on the game, it was a bit like the derby, wasn't it, the first half, where Liverpool started off really well, didn't he, in the derby for the first 10 minutes, pulverised us, and we gradually got into the game. And the same thing on Wednesday. I really enjoyed the game, you know, like everybody else, and it was end-to-end stuff. Just wondering whether the artificial nature of football at the moment, because there's no crowds, some of the other stuff that's going on means that is it if can you compare games at the moment to games in the past? Are you looking at two different things? Because there's no crowds, because, well, it's one-off FA Cup games. I know, like, the replays you know, in the past. Just wondering, it's a bit... The more and more think about this season, Phil, the more and more think about how it's very difficult to judge how good a job people are doing or not doing. Because it's all artificial. How good the games, how bad the games. Very, very difficult for me to judge. What I would say, I take on board Carlo, what Carlo's doing. Definitely. But when we're judging individual players and stuff, playing well, playing badly, is that a long-term thing or is it just purely because what's going on at the moment? So I'd be very wary on comparing this game to games that I've seen in the past purely because there's no crowd there. That's it for me. I know what I was going to say then, that was it. Fantastic game, but I wouldn't necessarily judge it about games I've seen in the past.
But Sam, just taking on Gav's point about no fans, can you imagine what it would have been like in the Gladys when Bernard scored if we'd had best part of 40,000 people in the stadium?
Yeah, I think we've all been there for a few, haven't we? No in our luck. If there was fans in there, we probably would have lost 5-4, wouldn't we? Bernard probably would have hit that over the bar and it would have been them scoring. But I think that is one. I think it was. There's obviously been a few occasions under Ancelotti. And I think now, you know, that we have players like James and Allen, who, you know, they're not exactly 21, 22. There's going to be a limited time that we can all see them. And we're all missing out on that, which is sad. But, you know, I've always said that most of my best memories growing up were, you know, and it wasn't just the famous ones, like, you know, Ferguson against United or Fiorentina and Lukaku against Chelsea. You know, there was Osman last minute against Portsmouth and Lee Carsley against Birmingham. And I always remember celebrating them with me dad and stuff in the Gladys Street, and they're always ones that you look back on. So, you know, for a generation of young any age Evertonians, you know, can still go for it as Preno and Gav in their 70s can attest to as well. So we've all missed out, haven't we? And it would have been boss, but I think it's small victories at this time. You know, now that the vaccine is getting rolled out and stuff, that a win, getting into the quarterfinal, and that boss moment. And Preno said exactly what I was going to say, that once it went to 4-4, I was just sat there just saying, sound, we've lost, we're out. It was a fun game, but we're out. And Carlo and the team are slowly changing that mentality. And a nice little quirk, I think you wrote in your verdict, Phil, after the game, that, you know, if everything would have went to plan, Bernard would have been having a nice sleep in bed in the UAE, but instead he was scoring the winner. And I think that, again, that's just something that's fell in Everton's favour, that's just worked out in our way. And we're going to need a few more of them till the end of the season if we're to win a cup or qualify for Europe. But, yeah, it was a great moment, great night. And hopefully in the next 12 months, fans will be back in there to be falling down 5 or 6 rows when a goal like that goes in.
Preno, Sam sort of alluding there to the omens that came out of Wednesday night, and obviously first time played Spurs in the FA Cup since 95, and you know, and just things like Bernard not meant to have been here and scoring winners. I mean, how much do you, as you know, does the Evertonian in you subscribe to, you know, maybe our name is on the cup? everything considered, even with the draw that we were given last night, all things considered.
I'm a big believer, and I'm quite superstitious when it comes to that. And it goes back to 1995 when in the car park at Bristol City, I found a pound on the floor, picked it up and said to, I forget what I was worth there, find a pound and pick it up. This year we'll win the cup. And, you know, little things like that you remember. And I don't know why. And it's always in hindsight. I probably did that 20 times and that was the only time we won the cup. But, you know, you remember them. And, you know, sometimes when you have a match like that where, you know, we could have been 3 or 4 nil down, let's face it, and you somehow come back and win. And you think that, well, maybe it could be. And then you get a draw like that the following night that absolutely flattens everybody. But I've seen a comment today, literally 20 minutes ago on Twitter, where a 66-year-old Everton fan said, I'm 66 years old. My first ever cup final was in 1966. And we beat Sheffield Wednesday, who, of course, we've beaten in the cup already this season. That year, we beat Manchester City in the quarterfinals. We beat Manchester United in the semi-finals. It's happening again. And so you see that and you think, well, yeah, you know, who knows? I mean, these superstitions only ever work out at the end when you've won the cup. You can look back then and you think, all right. You know, because in 1995, no one actually put any significance to the fact that we beat the Rams, we beat the Robins, we beat the Canaries, and then we beat the Magpies. And everyone's desperately looking for some kind of, you know, sort of animal link with Spurs. And yes, they've got a cockerel on their badge. So, you know, it's only in hindsight those things tend to happen. But, you know, don't be too down on the fact that we're playing Manchester City. Yes, it's very, very tough. And as Gavin so articulately said in a pod last week, you've got to beat at least one, maybe two of the really big guns if you're going to win a trophy nowadays. Yeah. You don't get free hits like Liverpool did in 1992 when they beat Championship sides all the way through to winning the FA Cup. Nowadays, nowadays you've got, including the final, nowadays you've got to beat you know, sort of one of the big guns. So it's going to have to happen sometime. And maybe the quarterfinal is a good time to face a team like City, given they've got Champions League commitments now. They'll be playing Borussia Mönchengladbach 3 or 4 days beforehand. Who knows what country that's going to be in, given the way things are looking at the moment. So, yeah, it's tough. Of course it's tough. But you're going to have to beat them sometime. So, you know, so why not now? So, you know, yes, I'm clinging to all these little nuggets of superstition. And, yeah, I am superstitious.
Gav, you're the king at delivering those sort of lines about in X year we beat X, Y, and Z. And so this could be... are you feeling similarly superstitious with the omens, or how are you feeling about the quarterfinal? And
I don't know. I think I know where Penno's come from on this. I think there's always, when you look back, I mean, it'd probably be proved wrong now after the quarterfinal. Yeah. There's always a certain time in the cup run where you think this is our year. You know, like this, we just think, ooh. I remember in '95, yeah, that Bristol City game, I think in '84, I think be Shrewsbury at home and fit around 3-0. He just plays really well. And I was thinking that year 3-1 before half time, I've not like not played that great in the first half and winning 3-1, you're thinking this has to be high here, this, and then Spurs score, and you're thinking no, or maybe not. I get that. I get what kind of sad. You know, it goes back to what I said at the start, is that in some respects, it's hard to be playing Man City in an artificial environment, maybe. They say that they've got all sorts of travelling to do and all that, to who knows, God knows where. And maybe it's a good time to play them. I'd certainly rather play them now at Goodison than a final. Or, you know, they've got a good record, haven't they, under Pep. But yeah, I had that moment against Spurs, actually, you know, when we went in 3-1, thought, this is our year, this. You know, we've been awful. Not awful, but we haven't played well. All of a sudden, we went in 3-1, after, you know. And then we could concede. But yeah, it was, you know, I mean, safe. I know it's not just one of the big, so-called big boys you've got to win. I think probably two or probably three you've got to beat nowadays. A bit like Moyes, wasn't it, in 2009? Yeah. What was it? Yeah, the tough, statistically the toughest cup run any manager ever had for the cup final, didn't he?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's becoming like that season, isn't it? We're looking at 2009 now for a good comparison.
Yeah.
Where Moyes had that, you know, played four of the top five, didn't he? Something like that. And we could end up doing the same, couldn't we?
And I think understandably, what was perhaps lost, certainly for me at the time on Wednesday in the madness, was actually the second time we've needed extra time in the competition already, having made heavy weather of Rotherham. You know, and you do wonder, don't you, those things where you're getting through, but not convincingly. There hasn't been any, other than the Sheffield Wednesday game, which was pretty routine. It's been 220 minute affairs where we've really had to dig in just to get through to the quarterfinals. But and I suppose the other thing as well, and I don't know if anybody agrees, Sam, I don't know if you'd agree with this, you know, we played City twice in the 15-16 season in cups, in semi-finals, and we ultimately were undone because they were two-legged affairs, weren't they? But this is going to be a one-off game. Are you more confident because it's going to be a one hit? You know, there's not going to be a chance for City to redeem themselves, so to speak, or...
Well, we also got cheated out of the 15-16 as well, didn't we?
Correct.
The ball was about 6 foot over the line from Sterling, so I'll always hold that grudge as well. To be honest, I didn't know that it was one leg. You've just informed me of something completely new. So, I did. Yeah, completely lying to you.
because I'll tell you now. Unlike what I'm saying is unlike in the League Cup of year gone by or whatever, you know, we would have to have played City.
Yeah, sorry.
You know, we've played City twice, haven't we? But because we're quarterfinals, one hit.
Yeah, you tricked me there a little bit, Phil, but I'll let it slide. I was talking to Chris Beasley about it before, actually, and now that the dust has... All right, if you could have picked a draw, no one would have picked City, but now that the dust has settled on it, look at the teams who were left in. You've got to beat one, or unless we get either the Bournemouth or Southampton one, and if we qualify for the semi-final, you're going to have to beat at least two teams who, you know, in terms of standing in the table, are probably going to be above us at that point in time. And I'd 100% rather, whether Goodison's full or not, I'd rather play City on our turf than playing them at Wembley, because they're used to that kind of big game stadium, big game kind of pressure around it, whereas we're not. You know, it would probably suit us more to play the likes of a Bournemouth or a Southampton, possibly even a Leicester at Wembley, than it would City. So it's annoying that, as Gav was saying there, when you're 3-1 up or when Bernard scores, you do start thinking, is this our year? But, you know, Man United and Chelsea have got each other, so there's another, you know, decent team that's going out. If we beat City, we probably would be potentially the favourites, because other teams then would have to start. You know, Leicester are going to have finishing in the top four on their minds. You know, you remember last season when they kind of stunk the gaff out after the Premier League restart and slipped out of the top four. You know, United could have Europe on the minds and things like that. So it would suit us. I think if we win this game, we would be really, really hot favourites to win it, just because what we'd have to concentrate on. You know, we could put a lot of eggs into our FA Cup basket. So now the dust has settled, one leg, we've got 90 minutes, or as we like doing, 120 minutes and penalties to get ourselves through. So it is just a shame, as we spoke about earlier, that I imagine how good it would be if we could have had 40,000 fans in there. The atmosphere would have been something else, wouldn't it? But hopefully the lads can give us all another good night from home.
Prano, would you have trusted yourself to be as... I was going to say calm, but nonchalant seems more appropriate kind of description of Carlo's reaction to Bernard's winner. I mean,
I can't even be that laid back in the press box where you're supposed to show professional reserve and calm. I've been told off many times for, I think, punched James Pearce a couple of times once during a derby match.
That was nothing to do with the goal.
No. I mean, you grow up, you know, watching football, and you have an enthusiasm and a passion for it, and you can't but fail to, you know, react that way, which is why, you know, so we are observers, and why, you know, so we are not coaches. And I've seen so many managers, you know, sort of do that. You know, it's strange. I don't know how they do it. Walter Smith, I remember speaking to him many times about, you know, football matches, and he actually telling me he can't physically sit and enjoy a football match anymore, because he's constantly analysing and thinking about what's happening in games, and he watches it in a different kind of way. And Carlo's exactly the same. Whether it's a continental thing, I don't know, because Rafa Benitez was almost, you know, so famously like that. The only Englishman I can ever think of who behaves like that was Sir Ralph Ramsey at the World Cup. Everybody else is going like mad, and he's just sat there stroking his chin on the bench. So it's become an iconic moment. And, you know, we're all going to be drinking tea from now on. We're all going to be blowing on it before we sip it. And it was great. It was really, really, you know, sort of iconic moments. And it just underlines, you know, the nature of the coach he is. He doesn't get too up and he doesn't get too down. And another Everton manager told me about that, Joe Royal, and he was the same. You know, so Joe, you know, was always beaming on the touchline, but he didn't lose himself with, like, reckless abandon like Duncan does, or, you know, so even Roberto Martinez or other managers, you know, so have done. He was always quite reserved. And to me, that indicates a manager whose mind is whirring all the time, who's always thinking about things. And it's almost like, you know, he nodded, you know, shortly afterwards, if, yeah, you know, I meant that. You know, I brought Bernard on just for that moment. And it's great. I mean, it's just another part of Carlo's charm, I think. You know, so that we all love the guy for the results that he's bringing to the football club. but also for little moments like that.
His official explanation for the non-celebration was, I was drinking a tea because it was because I was freezing. After the 90 minutes, I couldn't talk because I was cold. I didn't celebrate. I had a cup of tea in my hand, and I didn't know if it was allowed because there was a check on the side. So that was the official explanation. But of course, none of us would put it past him just because he is that way inclined, isn't he? Gav, just going back to the other parts of the action, obviously, 5 goals, 1 was a penalty, 4 from open play. Which was the best assist?
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I like McGilfey's, I think, for Bernard. Haven't you got to go with that? But that was said before. I've now many, many times on the pod, the player at the moment, Sigurdsson, isn't he?
Yes.
And you know, he's not going to run a game for it. He's probably not going to be in and around the box, you know, in and around the play. He's not going to be receiving the ball every 10 seconds and moving on. So on the pitch, for specific reasons, for specific moments. And you saw that, I think, for the Bernard's goal, didn't you? I think, to be fair, that'd be my one. And a good finish by Bernard. I'm not having a great week watching Everton. Obviously, after last Saturday's shambles and a couple of things went on there. I put out on Twitter, it's taking me, you know, Sammy didn't realise that semi-finals, it was one game in the FA Cup this year. I never realised until Wednesday that they tossed again for extra time to the ends. And I never did. I put it out on Twitter. I never got my inbox was like, you know, full. People don't even know the toss for ends again. I didn't realise. I'd say, Sigurdsson for Bernard. But I'd say Bernard, I said in the lads WhatsApp group, you know, I'm not sure about Bernard, shall we say, for this game, and prove me wrong. Isn't it? You know, Preno, going back to Preno's point, you know, I think people have likened a little bit to the old Daniel Amicacci performance against Spurs in 95. Yeah, Sigurdsson, that was tremendous. And a really good finish by Bernard as well, with his wrong foot. That was a tremendous goal. Fittingly, a goal to win a great game.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Sam, is this going to be the start of Richarlison's season? I said it about 3 weeks ago, and he, as to borrow your phrase, stunk the gaff out on a few occasions since. But is this the start now, belatedly, of Richarlison rediscovering top form and helping us in the final sort of 17, 18, or however many games we have left?
I hope so, just because it was starting. I think we, you know, it was a couple of games, and everyone was just kind of like, you know, it'll come. It'd be fine. Then it was 3 or 4 games. And then, you know, it did end up being quite a long spell where he didn't just look out of sorts, did he? Just looked constantly fuming on everything, you know, whether he'd done good things or bad things. He was just fuming. It was weird. So for him to get his 2 goals and again, just show what a match winner he is. I think it was quite similar when we went to the game at Leicester, Phil, which was probably his last, you know, game where he had, you know, real influence, certainly on the front foot, because I still maintain that even when he's playing badly, I think Ancelotti just plays him because he knows he'll run until the cows come home, won't he? But again, at Leicester, it wasn't exactly, you know, until that moment, he'd kind of been in the round and then he just picks the ball up and scores. And, you know, both of his goals were quite similar to that against Spurs, where he just shows, you know, what a talent he is and how good a player he can be. So Everton, when Richarlison are playing, when Richarlison's playing well, they're just a totally different team, I think, especially on the front foot. And hopefully there might be a little silver lining. You know, if there's anyone to be playing when Dominic Calvert-Lewin has kind of twinged his hamstring a little bit, then it's probably going to be a team in the bottom three at home. Let's hope that we can get the win there, keep the pressure on. Maybe Dom, you know, from what Carlo's saying, it's more of a precautionary thing. Get Dom a little rest. And I think that if he's fired on all cylinders and Richarlison's fired on all cylinders and James is as well, then we are just a totally different proposition. So, you know, I think we've all kind of conceded that there's a few, there's an Everton future where someone is going to come in and bid 100 million for Richarlison or possibly even more one day. And we would have to hold our hands up and let him go if we weren't quite, you know, in the Champions League places or competing for titles at that point. But hopefully now until the end of the season, he starts showing that he is that kind of player, because it's sad when he doesn't, because he's too good to be sulking and he's too good to be out of form, really. So another couple of goals against Fulham would do me.
Indeed. Sam neatly segues onto the next part of the pod where we talk about Fulham and we talk about, of course, that there's no Calvert-Lewin, as Sam says, Carlo sounding like he's just resting him for a precautionary reasons and that he will be fit to face City. So what does Carlo do? Does he go with Richarlison as the number nine and build a front three, you know, around him with the returning Rodriguez and maybe Iwobi or whoever? Or do we give a first start to Josh King?
No, we do both. Listening to what Carlo said before, I mean, he covered all bases. You know, he said that, yeah, Josh King can play that central role, but he can also play winger, I think he called it. So I just think Richarlison looked so much more hungry and comfortable down the middle. You know, he obviously loves that role, you know, so he loves, you know, being the centre of attention and leading the line. And King can play in the wider positions. So, you know, I'd be inclined to move Richarlison into the middle, start with Josh King on the left and James on the right. You know, we do need to mix things up a bit. Iwobi, I know he gets, you know, it's a tough time, but the most constructive thing he did that night was post that picture on Instagram of the celebrations. He frustrates me. You know, when you want to see, what was it the commentator said? And, oh, you know, Iwobi can't quite deliver the cross. And how many times do you hear that? So, you know, we need to make changes, because the players will have given so much on Wednesday. You know, there's so much intensity and so much effort. We've got to freshen it up as much as we possibly can. So it's, you know, reassuring to hear that Gomez will be fit and available, you know, as will James Rodriguez. And, you know, maybe we do need to, you know, sort of take Dominic out just for a bit, just to give him a rest. So we've got to try and freshen it up as much as we can. But to be as dangerous as we can be, I'd like to see that front three that I've mentioned starting. I mean, sometimes you have teams that, you know, you always routinely do well against. And Tottenham were never one of those teams until this season. Hopefully that's beginning to change a little bit now. I mean, West Ham were always a team that we always did well against. Obviously, that's turned on its head this year. But, you know, Fulham historically at Goodison have been a team that we always beat, always. Away from home, we never did. You know, we couldn't win at Craven Cottage to save our lives until Leon Osman scored that late double, you know, so last match of the season a few years back. But since then, you know, so Fulham tends to be one of those fixtures that we've done okay against. I know we haven't played them that recently because of their, you know, spell in the second tier. So I'm just kind of hoping, you know, superstition again, you know, so we normally do quite well against Fulham, and hopefully that will continue. Because despite their position in the table, they're a decent side. They've improved massively over the last few months, and they've gone very, very close a number of times against some decent teams. So it's going to be tough. We're going to need to be absolutely at it. We can't start as slowly as we started on Wednesday. We've got to start better. So to that end, hopefully with, you know, a slightly freshened lineup, as fresh as we can make it, given how small our squad is at the moment, we can, you know, sort of get a result. So it's important, because let's face it, you know, Wednesday is going to be even tougher. So, you know, we need to get a win. You know, we can't let the fact that we've had a really great cup result on Wednesday impact upon Sunday's game. We've got to get a result and we've got to win it.
Gav, you know, as Prano rightly mentions and brings up there, you know, 120 minutes on Wednesday. Yes, we've got the game isn't until Sunday, but there will be tired legs. Carlo limited with how much he can refresh it. Can he even afford to think about giving somebody like Doucouré a rest? Doucouré just hasn't stopped running all season. He's just been phenomenal, hasn't he? Can he even contemplate giving a player of that importance a rest with the game that comes up on Wednesday?
Yeah, I get Josh King. By the way, I play Josh King. I think he needs minutes on the pitch, doesn't he? Because he's going to get minutes on the pitch between now and the end of the season. So it makes sense to start him. Does Doucouré ever stop running? Is he the type of player who needs to play games? You get players like that, don't you, who need to play games? I don't know. That's a conversation between the manager and the player, isn't it? What do you think? I would imagine. Just thinking, if he didn't play Doucouré,
So let me spin it on its head then. You know, if Carlo's minded to sort of play similar formations as the last couple of games, can he afford to break up Decore and Davis, who have played very well?
No, I'm just about options. If you play 4-3-3, I think the easiest way of looking at this, fellas, is to look at the formation. If you play 4-3-3, Bob Penner was saying seems reasonable. Richarlison, Rodriguez, King. You play three in the middle. At the moment, that would have to be Decore, Gomez, Davis, wouldn't it?
Yes.
And we're not going to drop Tom, you know. Never thought that, you know, and it's a measure of Tom's progress that, like, you know, sometimes when Tom's being dropped in the past, people said, well, that's a good move. But actually, if you drop Tom on Sunday, there'd probably be a revolt, wouldn't there, at the moment? Which is a credit to Tom, which shows you how things can change quite quickly. So you're not going to drop Tom. You'll probably want Andre on the pitch for minutes as well, because obviously he's missing. So you then, if you don't play the corner, you're going to play 4-2-3-1, aren't you? Which brings a Wolby back into the equation, I would imagine. Maybe with Rodriguez as a 10. So that's the way you could do it. Maybe if you're playing Fulham at home, that could be the right way of playing. I get you don't. That, as I say, that's a you don't have players fields here, and you know you don't lose Carry Niggles and stuff because that was like a punishing 120 minutes for a lot of players, wasn't it? On there, and you know, and Bernard, I suppose, is a selection. It's a selection option, maybe, but. I don't know. For Decore, that's between Carl and the player. I'd rather keep him in because every time I see him, you know, I always think, why didn't we have you 3 years ago?
I think we tried, didn't we?
Yeah. You know, when you think the players you bought 3 years ago, and we, you know, you just think, why couldn't we have had you 3 years ago? And by the way, I was going to save this later because Brennan mentioned it then. Everton Fulham. Isn't it? It's the best run of home victories in a single fixture in Football League history, isn't it?
Oh, wow. Right.
Is it 20, is it 22 on the bounces or something like that? It's the best in history at any level. So I think if you wanted to play, I'd play him. I think he looks like the player who could probably do that by two games a week.
He's had a little bit of a break recently as well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I know he didn't start against Rotherham, but we brought him on after an hour and he made a massive difference. And so, you know, he's not being absolutely flogged, you know, throughout the entire season. I know that's only a midweek game that he missed. But you just get the impression that he's one of those guys that, you know, could run all night. I mean, the commentator mentioned again on Wednesday, Tom Davis looks like the kind of man that could run all night. But to me, Decore looks even more of an athlete than that. He just never seems to suffer at all. You know, there are some players that, you know, they do look like they're absolutely dead on their feet at times, with Charleston being one of them. And I'll never forget Cheng Tosin's demeanour at the last minute of that Rotherham game, where it looked like he couldn't even walk after the game. But, you know, Decore looks like he could happily go for another, you know, sort of 5 or 6 mile warm down afterwards. So I wouldn't have undue concern about playing him again. But the sports scientists will monitor, you know, his muscle tissue recovery and what have you, and, you know, decide whether he's going to be able to play.
The final point is our first two choice midfielders on Sunday should be Davis and Gomez, definitely. And then a question about whether you want to play Decore, based on what I've just been saying about keeping them.
Sam and the player we've not mentioned is the player who's involved in more goals and more incidents than anybody on Wednesday, Sigurdsson. I mean, does Carlo have to keep him in the team, or does rotation again make way for sentiment in that respect, and you know, this revolving sort of room of players in and out, and Sigurdsson just have to accept it?
Well, we've got Bessage back in the squad now, haven't we? To give him a little run out. Don't know. Sigurdsson's a weird one, isn't he? Who seemingly plays quite a lot of minutes, and he's, you know, he's, what is he? Is he 30? 31?
31, yeah.
And seemingly kind of keeps going. I think he does have a good natural fitness and stamina about him. So, yeah, as Gav says, it is probably more down to the formation and how he's going to kind of set that up. But I think it's difficult to change at the moment. I think that three just do have to. I don't know. I think from when the way you were speaking in the press conference, it looks like Gomez would come back in. I probably would go for Sigurdsson then. Yeah, I think because I just think if you take the Corey or Davis out, it is quite risky to open up the midfield like that. So yeah, maybe Sigurdsson would be the one more to be set for the rest. But it's weird, isn't it? The impact that the Corey has made, that I genuinely can't remember what this Everton had. How did we even stay up last season with that? such a good impression from someone who, again, there was questions, wasn't there, about, he's the wrong age of 27, 28, I think, himself, coming from a relegated team. We tried to sign him before under Marco Silva, but he's just been phenomenal, and he's just been great in every single game he's played, which has been really good to see. And I generally think that, obviously Ancelotti is having a big effect on Tom Davies, as is David Ancelotti, as is Duncan Ferguson. But, at the same time, I do think that playing alongside the likes of Alan, Decore, James is also improving them. There's no question about it. So really happy with the balance we've got in midfield at the moment, and really excited for Alan to come back as well. And I think that gives Carlo a real headache of where to fit them all in.
Just for the interest of debate and discussion, Sam, do you think Marco Silva might still be in a job if we just signed Decore when you first arrived?
No, probably not. Just seeing too much horror over those 18 months or so. I think we were at the one at Millwall. I always remember that. The one at Anfield was just absolutely sickening as well, wasn't it? That team performance. So probably not, but I do think it would have changed a lot. I think even Ancelotti himself showed that, some of the, I specifically remember the Wolves game away and Bournemouth at home on the last day of the season, that we potentially could have just went without the midfield and it wouldn't have made a difference. It was just a mixture of, not the right people just horribly out of form. Tom Davies and Andre Gomez in the last 4 or 5 weeks have just looked. I generally don't think they look like the same player. It's scary how much they've changed recently. Morgan Schneiderlin was there for a little, was getting game time, and it wasn't great. So I think it might have set everything back a few months if we would have got to Corey. Maybe we would have got more time. Maybe we would have won a few more matches. But fate works the way it does. We had a really specific window, didn't we, of Sack and Silva and Ancelotti losing his job at Napoli, which has worked out great for us. So I think in some ways I'm glad we didn't sign Decore when we first tried to.
Okay, the final part of today's pod, of course, is the predictions. Everton versus Fulham Sunday night at Goodison, of course, rearranged because of the cup game. Preno, how do you see it going?
Hopefully that the freshened starting 11 that we're anticipating and that we want to see, we'll have enough quality. You look at the way we played at Craven Cottage, and we just had so much quality for them, so much more quality than they had, and should have won probably a lot more comfortably than we actually did in the end. And I would hope that would be brought to bear again on Sunday night in this most unpredictable of Premier League seasons. I'm going to go for quite a predictable result. I think it'll be nothing like Wednesday. It'll be a tighter game again. We might have to be a little bit patient, but I think we'll see it through. We'll win 2-0, and we may even see a debut goal for Josh King.
Gav, same to you. What do you think will happen on Sunday?
I've got a funny feeling. We've got to win, haven't we? I haven't quoted that stat about the record, 23, whatever it is. So, when you talk about omens, it works the other way sometimes, doesn't it? I think we've got enough there, haven't we, really? You suspect morale's quite good in the team at the moment, which is always a big thing, isn't it, for me? Especially at the moment where it's obviously difficult times for everybody. I think if you've got a strong dressing room where people are feeling positive, I think that can make an enormous difference in the current environment of playing football. And I think that's probably carrying us forward, I think, probably at the moment just as much. And so after, I've got to say Fulham are going to win after all that, aren't I? But, I regulation 2-0 for me. Probably like a lot of the male population of Everton fans anyway. 7 o'clock on Valentine's night is not exactly, you know, a settled day, shall we say. There's various negotiations that have to go out on in our house before I can watch it on Sunday, you know. But seriously, 2-0, no problem.
Just had a quick check because both you and Pren are gone for 2-0. We've only ever won 2-0 in the league once under Carlo.
Right.
Leicester City this season.
I was just looking at Fulham's results there as well. And I think they've only won one Premier League game all season. That was against West Brom way back in the beginning of November. But all the results since then, okay, they've lost a lot, but they've been really tight. I mean, 0-0 West Ham, 0-2 Leicester. That's the last time they lost. 2-2 West Brom, 0-0 Fulham. You know, so Burnley battered them. So, yeah, I mean, 2-0 sounds right. But, yeah, Sam's coming up next, so who knows what we're going to get from this one.
Go on, Sam.
Well, actually, do one of the first ever things I had to do when I was on work experience at the Echo was Preno got me to do this, like, is it on TV type piece, you know, to find out what channel it was on. And there was a bit in it where it was like what I'd put my money on. And I said, Josh King to score the first goal for Bournemouth, but Nias to score the winner. And it was the time when he came on under Koeman and scored two and scored the winner. So I got that completely spot on, which then directly feeds into this, doesn't it? Because I think we're going to win 4-1, Josh King to score the first goal.
Wow.
Big win.
First?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sam, is Nias going to score as well then? carry that through to its logical conclusion.
Okay. I think it's time to get him back. Now the Calvert-Lewin's
in. I think it is. Well, he's starting him on a short-term deal.
No,
he's a free agent, so it costs nothing.
Yeah.
I'd rather see Sam up there than him on the ass.
I'm not quite as confident as Sam, but I think we'll score two. But I just think at the moment we may well concede. There was some 10 goals conceded in the last four games now. Yeah. So some things for Carlo to rectify, but I think we'll still win anyway. Great stuff, chaps. Thank you very much for your company. Thank you very much for listening. Of course, you can keep up to date on all of the action, reaction, opinion and analysis from Goodison Park on Sunday night. Myself and Adam Jones will be there. And of course, keep with the Echo across the weekend for all the best preview stuff. But you've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.